Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's our favorite, the columnist and Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett, and not just any columnist, the apex of columnists. Welcome back, Ken.
It's good to be back.
Ken, let me start. You know, first of all, nobody knows anything except Trump these days. I mean, Trump. But you cover the state beat. And when you do, you bring stuff to our attention that might not make it otherwise. There is this business going on with who gets extra money, sometimes called Lulu, sometimes called, you know, extra service,
stipends.
Whatever it is. Yeah. So what's the story here?
Well, I gotta give credit to McKinley over at the New York Times. He had a story last week that, you know, all the committee chairs in the Senate and the ranking Democrats get stipends, you know, thousands of dollars above their baseline salary.
So when they say to you, I make $79,000 or whatever, that's baloney.
Well, yeah, in the Senate, everyone gets a stipend. And usually it can range from anywhere, if you're a Democrat, like $8,000, $9,000. If you're a Republican, it can go all the way up to $20,000, $30,000, depending on what the stipend is.
So let me get this straight. You come up, you show up on what, Monday afternoon, you're here for Tuesday, and then you go home. And then you argue, well, I have to see people in my district office, but, you know, I've known a lot of senators and others who don't meet anybody in their district offices. So they're working 1 or 2 days a week, and they're always bitching about how little money they get, $79,000, whatever it is, what is that?
Right. $79,500.
And now they get extra money, up to $20,000 each for those same 2 days a week for banging down
a... Well, and even more. I mean, if you're a leader, you can get 30-something thousand. But yes, but that's been going on for years. We all knew about it. What McKinley at the Times wrote about last week and what we've kind of expanded on is that John Flanagan, the Senate Majority Leader, has been giving stipends to members of the Independent Democratic Conference, which is a group of 8 breakaway Democrats. And
otherwise known, as I've often said, as the traitors.
And he's been giving them stipends, even though some of them, 3 of them, were not chairmen of committees. They were vice chairs. And there's nothing in law that says a vice chair can get a stipend. So what Flanagan's been doing has been, if you are in the Senate or the Assembly, you could be in a leadership position, which brings you a stipend, and you can have a committee chair that brings you a stipend, but you can't take 2 stipends. You have to take the 1. So what's been happening, and which has been common over the years, is some committee chairs who also have leadership positions that pay more, they will take the leadership stipend. In the old days, that just meant that the committee stipend went unused. You know, okay, he's not taking it. It goes back into the state coffers. What they've been doing now is they said to a couple of IDC members, you can have the committee stipend as a vice chair. You can have the chairman stipend. And then what he also did this year for the first time was he said to a number of his upstate Republicans, we're also going to give you vice chair stipends that would have gone to the committee chairman. And what was interesting with some of the Republicans is they had their own committees, but they got more. For instance, there, you know, if you were on the education committee as a vice chair and you got the committee stipend, you got $18,000. The guy who has that as the vice chair had his own committee, but it was only a $12,000 stipend, $12,500. So he's actually getting like $5,500
more. So let's say you're the head of the Republican conference. That's a leadership position, right?
That's a leadership position.
And you get more than if you were committee chairman.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what's
and
the
big... And you could be a majority whip, and that gets more than a committee chair as well.
So this is piggery, right? Is that what this is
it is, but why this has raised a lot of questions is when they had submitted their payroll records to the state comptroller's office, the Senate, and they said these are the stipends that need to be paid out. They had listed the 7 senators who were getting committee chairman stipends but were vice chairs. They listed them as committee chairs. That could be illegal.
Well, it might be illegal because, as you said, there's a law, L-A-W, that governs all of this, and that it doesn't say anything about vice chairs, only chairs.
Only chairs. And if you're saying someone's a chair and they're not, is that filing a false instrument, which, depending on the circumstance, could be a felony. The Senate lawyers say no. And of course,
what do you mean? No.
That it's legal. That it's completely legal.
Well, how could it be legal?
They're saying that by law, there's nothing stopping a vice chair from getting a stipend. It doesn't say they can. It doesn't say they can't. And that basically, it's just an accounting maneuver to be able to pay them out.
Well, listen, Kent Lovett, why would you then have a law which specifically says you have to be a chair to get the money?
That is the question, and that's why some people are saying there should be an investigation. Now, the question is, why is Flanagan doing it so much now? And one of the
things, we know.
Well, one of the things I wrote about this week in my Monday column was there's really three reasons. One, he's giving it to the IDC members to keep them happy.
Now, the IDC, remember, everybody, in case you're getting lost here, is the breakaway Democratic senators who don't like the regular Democratic senators and who made separate deals, separately arrived at, as Woodrow Wilson would say, with the Republicans.
And they're in a leadership coalition. They're aligned with the Republicans.
And they're keeping them in power.
Yes. And so he needs to keep them happy. So he's making sure that they all eight of them now get stipends, including three who are vice chairs who otherwise would not have gotten a stipend. So that's one. Two, a lot of members were unhappy that they were unable to get a pay raise in December, that the talks fell through. Right. They haven't had a pay raise since 1999. So this way, by giving four of his members, you know, vice chairs, committee stipends, he's making them happy. He's giving them a few extra bucks. And three, and very importantly, Flanagan has showered the extra money on upstate Republicans, three of which voted for John DeFrancisco as leader 2 years ago.
Against him.
Against him. So this is a way of also keeping them in line.
Yeah, well, this is extraordinary and just goes to the greed and avarice, which we all know is part of the legislative process in New York. I remember when I worked for a thing called the Eagleton Institute of Politics, and we were the research arm of the National Council of State Legislative Leaders. And I remember that almost everybody in New York had a leadership position. You know, in these other states, it was one or two or three guys. But here, everybody, virtually everybody.
Virtually everybody. And I think we're going to see one of two things. At the very least, it's a political headache for the Senate Republicans and the Independent Democrats. It's a headache that could hurt them politically. I'm sure it's going to be used against them. Possibly, there's criminal implications. If they filed false reports that people were committee chairs and entitled to stipends that weren't, that could be much more serious.
Well, which prosecutor would bring this charge? It could be a federal prosecutor, right?
You know, I don't know if this would reach a federal level, although the way Preparara did, everything reached a federal level. I would think it would fall under three areas. Either the state attorney general.
Right, Eric Schneiderman.
Eric Schneiderman. The Albany DA, David Soares, who has shown no compunction to go after
political
thing, and then or it can go to the state ethics commission where, you know, issues go to die in the view of a lot of people.
But they can't prosecute anyway, right?
No, but they can do heavy fines. They can and then refer if they find criminality.
Okay, so now let's go back to these guys in the Independent Democratic Conference. Again, if you're out there and you're listening and you want me to try to make this understandable and can make it understandable, what happens is that these people are in a position now to keep the Republicans in power, right? So it's terribly important to do that. But because the Democrats are waking up and because of rampant anti-Trump feelings in New York State, it looks like these guys in this independent breakaway conference, Democratic conference, who are also known as the traitors, are going to face primaries.
Yeah, already we know of one. I was joking. I wrote about how Robert Jackson, a former city councilman down in Manhattan, is going to challenge Marisol Alcantara, who is a freshman senator. She joined the IDC immediately. And Jackson announced that he was going to primary her next year in September. And the interesting thing is that when Alcantara won, it was a three-way race. And the third challenger, who actually came in second against her, already has said he will back Robert Jackson rather than run another split race. And so it's the first time in my 23 years here that I've ever written about a state Senate primary 16 months in advance of a state Senate primary. And that just shows you the level of anger and the opportunity that a lot of the Democrats see now. I think the IDC is going to be under intense pressure because of Trump and because of other things to flip. And I'm not sure that the governor is going to stand still this time and let it happen, that where they just keep going with the Republicans.
What do you mean, let it happen? There are those of us who think he encouraged it.
Right, but I don't think, even if that's the case, I think Next year, the governor's up for re-election. He's got a problem on his left. He's possibly considering a run for president in 2020. He cannot do that if he's being hammered for allowing this situation with the IDC and the Republicans to continue. So you may actually see him for the first time go all out for a Democratic Senate, even though he doesn't want to, but he might have to.
Interesting. Very interesting, Ken Lovett. That's why we love having you on this show. Okay, so the lieutenant governor now. Okay, I defy anybody out there to go stand on a corner of 42nd Street and Lexington Avenue and ask everybody who passes, what's the name of the lieutenant governor? If you get one person who knows out of 1,000...
They can get a WMC hat.
You could get a WMC hat. But now there's a whole push to get her, and her name is Kathy Hochul. And she's being pushed to help the Democrats take back the House of Representatives and to run up there against...
Against Chris Collins, who is close to Trump. He was a big supporter of the House health care bill that just passed. He had his own amendment that the governor has gone to war at. And it's been interesting because Hochul held the seat before Collins. Collins actually narrowly beat her. And people want to see her run a rematch. They think that given the current political environment, she could beat him. And I spoke to her last week, though, and she said no, she doesn't want to do that, that she is focused on running again as lieutenant governor. She likes being lieutenant governor. And her reasoning was interesting, which she said to me that Washington is so dysfunctional right now that even if she went back there, there's very little chance they'll be able to get anything done. And she goes, I'm a person who likes to get things done, and I think I could do more, you know, working for the Cuomo administration than I could do in D.C.
Well, and of course, if you're lieutenant governor, there's always the possibility, if lightning struck the right way, that Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general, would step aside and that she would get to be the governor.
Well, I did put this to her in that Cuomo, if he's serious about running in 2020 for president, theoretically, either he could step aside, you know, during his term, or if he won, if somehow he won the presidency, she would become governor. And I asked her, is that part of the calculation on your part? And I know you're going to be shocked. She said, no, it's not, that she's not thinking at all about that. And that
she's not thinking at all about it. To quote the Princess Bride, liar.
But she says this is something, you know, she likes her job and that's what she's focused on. That's what every politician says before they take the next step, right?
Yeah, right. So that is fascinating because, you know, you could end up, you're quite right. I'm thinking about this now. Thinking, there's no G on thinking when you're talking on the radio because it makes you seem more progressive thinking. But okay, but let's assume for a second that she gets to be the governor because he gets to be the president. Now, obviously, AG Attorney General Schneiderman is waiting in the wings to take this job. But if she's the governor, if she's moved out to be governor, the Democrats might have to decide between a sitting female governor or Schneiderman.
Absolutely. And, you know, Schneiderman would have a lot more progressive support. She has a few more conservative leanings that she has been there for. She was a big, you know, the NRA was a big fan of her when she was in Congress. So those would be things she would have to overcome. But we are so far away from this because there are so many what ifs. The what ifs is how does Cuomo do next year if he does run for re-election? You know, if he doesn't, then this is moot. But if he runs for re-election, how much does he win? Does he really decide to run for president? And if he runs for president, can he actually win? So there's a lot. And that's before we even talk about the trials that are about to start on corruption that could hurt the governor.
They're going to hurt him because, as we've mentioned many, many times, some of his best friends are standing trial.
Absolutely. And those trials start in October. And look, I've said this a million times, that even if the governor is not criminally implicated, the one thing that could really hurt him are these trials, because look what happened to Chris Christie with Bridgegate in New Jersey. He wasn't criminally implicated.
Yeah, but don't worry. He's going to be the head of the FBI, so you don't have to worry about that.
But two of his aides were convicted, and guess what? Christie's numbers went as low as any New Jersey governor has seen. So, you know, Cuomo, I'm sure, is afraid of that. Now, he's got a couple of things going for him. Bridgegate was a scandal that's a lot easier to understand. People paid attention to it more. It was more of a downstate scandal. This one's more of an upstate scandal. And I think, too, Trump is just sucking the air out of the room, that all politics, all people are focused on is D.C. right now. So
true.
Cuomo, actually, that actually helps him in this case.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Fascinating. Which brings us, of course, to who on the Republican side, or as I said, to Ed Cox, the head of the Republican Party, so who you got? And they bring up what I've described as the same old, same olds. Okay, so here's some of them. I'll give them to you, and then you tell me what their chances are. Rob Astorino.
Westchester County executive. He's running for re-election this year.
He lost the last time against Cuomo.
He lost against Cuomo in 2014. The assumption is he'll win re-election and start running for governor right away. I think he has an excellent shot of being the candidate. The conservatives like him. The county chairs liked what he did a couple of years ago. He got something like 40% to 42% of the vote.
Against Cuomo.
Against Cuomo, which was higher than a Republican had done. Now, there is an asterisk there, though, that the raw vote-wise, he got the same number of Republican votes as Carl Paladino did against Cuomo in 2010.
Interesting.
The big difference was a million less people came out in 2014 than in 2010, and a million less people voted for Andrew Cuomo in 2014. So the percentage for Astorino was higher, but the raw total was the same.
And then the next name that comes up on our list is Harry Wilson. Now, he's respected by a lot of people, ran for controller, didn't he, and almost won.
He ran against Tom DiNapoli in 2010. He almost won.
Almost won because Cuomo put a political knife in Tom DiNapoli, a wonderful man's back.
And Wilson has his own money. You know, Wilson, he's not like obscenely wealthy, but the last time I think he put in something like $7 million for the comptroller's race. So he's got cash. He's a business turnaround expert. He's a little more of a moderate than Astorino is on social issues. He was picked by Barack Obama to serve on the bailout for General Motors. So, you know, he's not just the hardcore Republican that would have a hard time in New York. So he would be interesting.
And yet, Ken Lovett, you know, he is what we call, what I always have called a who-he. That's WHO-HE?
Yeah, no, it's true. He doesn't have name recognition. Look, the reality is neither does Astorino. But first and foremost, you've got to get through the primary, and you've got to show an ability to raise money. You know, those are going to be the first things that have to get done. Cuomo is seen, I wouldn't say he's seen as vulnerable, but he's certainly weaker than he was 4 years ago. That's why he's worked so hard to win back the left, because you cannot win. If you're him, the Republican most likely is going to win upstate. Cuomo has to win in the suburbs, which is not a guarantee, and he's got to win huge in New York City.
Okay, and then, of course, they're throwing it in, I think it's somewhat gratuitous, Majority Leader John Flanagan of the state Senate, who just, as we spoke before, was giving out all this obscene amounts of money to his...
I think it would be really difficult for Flanagan to get the nomination. I think, first and foremost, in a Republican primary, you have a guy in Flanagan who voted for the SAFE Act. The gun control bill that upstaters and Republicans really despise, and you have a guy who voted for it, it would be very hard for him to move in a primary past that.
That's interesting. And then on the Democratic side, there's a lot of talk about one of my favorite people in the world, Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, running against Cuomo in a primary.
I see her more running for Congress. I think Cuomo will have a potential challenger on the left. I don't know if Miner is going to be it. I mean, look, she was his hand-picked party co-chairwoman for a while.
But and she gave him a raspberry.
She actually criticized him openly, which is a no-no in Cuomo land.
And I would say.
And they, I would say, are enemies. He won't even set foot in the city of Syracuse. He'll go to that area, and he'll go to places around Syracuse, and he won't invite her to the events. He's very close to Republican County Executive Joni Mahoney.
I'll get her.
So I think she would be formidable in that she's smart, she's aggressive, but I don't know if she has the ability to raise money, and I don't know how much damage, other than to hurt him and maybe bring his numbers down, but I couldn't see her winning necessarily.
Well, I'm not sure. I respectfully say this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I thoroughly agree with you. Look at Zephyr Teachout. The last time, the second election is always a lot easier than the third, and Zephyr Teachout, philosophically, came very close to cleaning his clock.
She got 35%. He did get 60% of the vote, and just to put it in perspective, myself included, we all wrote at the time when Cuomo got 60% of the primary vote, it was an underwhelming performance and you know, a surprisingly strong challenge by Zephyr Teachout. However, when Hugh Carey defeated his own lieutenant governor, Marianne Krupsek, in a Democratic primary, he beat her 60-40, and all the coverage was Carey trounces his lieutenant governor. So it's all in perspective.
He was very unpopular at that point, Carey. I remember him pretty well during all of that. But she did, Zephyr Teachout did win most of the upstate counties.
She did, but you can beat Cuomo in a lot of counties, but you've got to beat him upstate, you've got to beat him in Erie County, you've got to beat him in Monroe, and you've certainly, you know, New York City is where it is. And if you look at his numbers right now, his numbers are, the only place are astronomical are New York City. He's got 65% of the Democratic vote.
His name is Cuomo. Okay, let's move on to DiNapoli. As you know, Cuomo, who does not play well in the sandbox of politics, took away from DiNapoli the right to pre-audit certain contracts that the state was letting. I thought it was a terrible idea at the time. DiNapoli pleaded not to have it happen, but the legislature went along with it for, I can't even imagine why, because DiNapoli is a product of that legislature, and they should have known better. And now they're all angry at Cuomo. So now DiNapoli wants that pre-audit function returned. And we think that had that pre-audit function been there, some of the things that Cuomo's pals were pulling that has now gotten them onto trial might, I say might, never have happened.
And we don't know, but certainly, you know, it never hurts to have an independent set of eyes unless you're Andrew Cuomo. Because if you, you know, what Cuomo has said is, rather than give the comptroller's office the power to pre-audit, and then he wants to have inspector generals
appointed by him
would appoint, and he says there's federal prosecutors. You know, the role of the federal prosecutors isn't to ensure that the contracts are done right. You don't want to get to that point. But certainly the governor, if there's an investigative function, he wants to control it, whether it's through IGs. You know, he has Jay Cope, which he appoints, the chair people. He's got his own inspector general that he appoints, the head of state police. And usually the people he hires have a history of working for him. So it's really been an issue during his time in office that he does not like to have an independent set of eyes around him.
Right, you are, Ken Lovett. And now, tell me a little bit about, you know, we know that there's an effort on by the Republicans to replace Obamacare. We don't know what's going to come out of the Senate. How important is Cuomo's role in New York State in this?
I think he's been very vocal, and I think it's raising, you know, his profile a bit, but I don't think his voice is important. I think Chuck Schumer's voice is going to be extremely important going forward.
Do we know if those guys like each other?
They do not like each other. They do not like each other. But I think Schumer, you know, look, whatever comes out of the Senate, the Republicans control it, but certainly Schumer, as the Democratic leader, has a big say in that.
Well, there's a big mess out in Rikers Island. What is Cuomo doing about that?
Well, Cuomo wants to shut it down within 3 years. He says the city should be able to find replacements within 3 years. De Blasio is less enthusiastic about it. He finally came out with a plan, or in support of a plan, that would close Rikers, but over 10 years. And Cuomo, given his relationship with the mayor, which is not a good one, has mocked that and said there's no reason it should take 10 years and that it should be done within three, and he would support legislation to do it within three.
I'll give you a minute to talk about a new Cuomo organization. He's had a couple of them, but now he's got something called New Yorkers United Together. What's that?
Which is made up of three people very close to the governor. Steve Cohn, his former top aide, Ken Sunshine, a PR guru who's close to the Cuomo family, and former city councilwoman speaker, Christine Quinn, who's also close to the governor. They have created a committee to raise money to help basically immigrants who are facing deportation and other legal issues from the feds. So they put together an ad that looked very much like a campaign ad that featured Cuomo and celebrities basically saying, we're one New York, we're all the same, and we're not going to tolerate these federal policies that hurt immigrants.
So we love having Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News with us. Ken, you are a phenomenon. I mean, you are so unbelievably knowledgeable about all this. And we love having you with us. We couldn't possibly get through everything I wanted to talk to you about. But maybe next time. This is the Capital Connection.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.